League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Welcome back to The Smiley Show. Smiley Kaufman, Charlie Hume here. The Open Championship grind has not stopped. It is just past 4 a.m. my time, and it's just past 9 a.m. your time in Dublin, Ireland. I got to say, Smiley, I think the odds that we were going to get this episode recorded after the where we both are sitting right now, I think Daniel Brown might have had shorter odds to win the Open hang of the week. So this is phenomenal. I mean, I'm proud of myself that I didn't skip my alarm. I'm proud of you. I mean, you had a night out in Dublin. I mean, might have been an even more improbable scenario. How is Dublin thus far? And where are we teeing it up here soon this morning?
Oh, man. I love me some Dublin. It's a great way of putting it. Daniel Brown, shorter odds than us actually making this call. Because we were trying to figure out when the heck are we going to do this? Because somebody's going to be, or both, really, there's no win-win for either of us. Because if we had done it last night, then I missed like the hang with all the boys. And then today, if I do it right before we go play golf, then Charlie's waking up in the middle of the night. So it's like you're kind of waking up to go to a flight and hopefully that maybe you can take a nap somewhere during the day. But playing some golf in Ireland this week, got a guy's trip. We're definitely going to recap the whole thing. Don't want to put any spoilers out there. Just everybody's going to have to be on the edge of their feet, if you will, as we go play some fun golf, man. I haven't played in a couple weeks, so I'm excited to see exactly where I'm going to hit my first tee shot because there's not a range at the golf course we're playing today. So it's a shame that I have to work through all seven swing thoughts on the first tee. So
that is in the episode dropping on Wednesday when we recap my Scotland trip. This is great. So we're going to have a Scotland trip recap. We're going to have an Ireland trip recap coming soon when you're back. But those first few courses were you show up and there's a net you hit into off of a piece of AstroTurf. And it's like, good luck trying to figure out where that golf ball's going. So, Godspeed to you, Smiley. If my brain short circuits in the middle of this and or my baby monitor goes off, if either of ours, you know why. But we have some Open Championship to recap here. We got a lot of big picture golf storylines to dig into. Before we go there, Smiley, we got to give a big shout out to the people at Wear SPF that are presenting this show right now and have just been a phenomenal partner to us. And I say that because in the midst of the move, I have a lot of cardboard boxes around here and I've been trying to kind of locate things and figure things. And I saw one out of the corner of my eye earlier this week and looked unopened, ran over there, popped it open, full box of good Wear SPF product. And so there's a ton of stuff in this box that I'll eventually talk about. But where I want to start was what I used on the golf course this week. And that is the sunscreen sport stick and the sunscreen lip balm. Like, I love this so much because of the convenience that it provided to me on the course where, to our point, we were talking last time about this action, the little seal hands action on the course. I got nine holes in. It was a absolutely cooking here on Open Friday here in Durham, North Carolina. And instead of worrying about the whole reapplication process, pulled out my stick, put it on my face, lip balms on the lip, and kept it rolling. So, I believe you have a box on the way too, but Wear SPF off to a great start and then came in at night and used the facial cleanser. I'm not using the correct term there, but it's A plus stuff. I'm loving it.
What was your takeaway from the facial cleanser?
I think
for guys that aren't skincare guys, at night, my wife has a full routine and I just kind of wash my face and hop in bed.
So I love that you mentioned the routine thing because my wife is much the same way. It's like, about ready time to go to bed and she's got to go in and do her whole thing. I'm like, I don't know what's going on over there, but I'm just going to hang here and just, chill on my phone, watch some TV. I think I might become a routine guy. And I think it might all be built around the Wear SPF products. I mean, this
there
is
you
it,
go.
It's a fantastic facial cleanser. It's right in that like middle zone of it's not going to shred my skin entirely, but it's also like effective in terms of cleansing all your pores and everything. So I might be a skincare routine guy. I think it's all going to center around Wear SPF stuff. I'm thrilled.
I love it. I love to hear it. That's amazing. Francie sent me a picture of the box at the house. I'm hoping to have most of the products there when I get back, and hopefully she hasn't used them all. But we're, you know, it's funny that you know these are always fun to you know have a partner and talk about their products, and this is it was the weirdest thing that on Sunday, because on the 13th hole, like looking at Russell Henley and Sam Burns, trying to find them from the fairway at 13. And I happened to like just make contact or eye contact with this marshal or somebody who's, if not a marshal, he's a guy that is keeping score with the group. And for whatever reason, I did the worst double take out of him. He probably thinks he either his fly is down or, you know, that he peed on his leg, something in that regard, because he was wearing an Wear SPF hat. And I was like,
how about it?
I was like, dude,
like the Spider-Man meme. Hey, yeah. You're the guy.
It was a great hat too. So he, you know, I told him that Wear SPF is a partner of the show. And he was like, what show? And I was like, oh, well, there you go. So now we're trying to get, this is a little bit of marketing going on now. So you're going to have to go and listen to the show because we're going to do a little Wear SPF blog on Monday. So hopefully if you're listening, man, that keeps scores at Open Championships, thank you for repping the brand and you caught my attention. So there we go.
And here you go. If you tuned in, now you got a discount code, which is Smiley, S-M-Y-L-I-E, 50. Smiley 50 will get you. It's a buy one, get the second one 50% off on any Wear SPF product, which is a phenomenal deal. You know, you can stock up on a couple cans of sunscreen if you want to, you know, spread them amongst your golf group. I tell you the other thing, I'll add in a kicker here for both of us on the dad front. If you have a child that is tough to put sunscreen on, that stick came in handy. We took Walker out.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
We took Walker out. I think this was this is Saturday night, I think. And, you know, you get to that point in the round where his cheeks are getting a little bit red and he's getting a little bit tired. It, almost like the hydration thing we talked about where, you know, he needs to drink some water. And I just hit him with the stick real quick and he's off and on his merry way. So, you know, another great hot tip for dads out there in the sunscreen game.
Yeah, Anna Carter doesn't doesn't have time for sunscreen. When she sees the pool, she is V-lining to it. And she does not have time to sit around and do the sunscreen thing. She has a mind of her own at 18 months old. So, yes, I ditto on that.
Try the stick.
And yes.
Yeah, Anna Carter.
Also, quick shout out. This might be the first time my brother has listened to the podcast as he is in the room here. So shout out to Luck. you got to know that there is the third person here in all this, just so when you're, you know, taking in this hotel room that my brother's here.
And Lucky gets a producer credit and tell him code Smiley 50 for Wear SPF sunscreen, S-M-Y-L-I-E 50. That's the code. Go check them out, support them. They're a big supporter of the show. So greatly appreciative to them for all they do. So with that said, Smiley, let's talk about the 152nd Open Championship. And man, there are so many places we could begin with this. I think that the text I sent to you as soon as this thing was over was, boy, did the player of the year race just get really, really interesting, which sounds insane to say out loud, given the season that Scottie Scheffler's had. But now you have a guy who's won two majors. And as we come down this home stretch and head towards the FedEx Cup playoffs, you and I both have talked about on this show and know Xander Schauffele is the East Lake Whisperer. So if and when he does get there, he's going to have a great chance of winning a FedEx Cup. So I think it is so wild to me to go back to, you know, earlier this season after the Masters, you know, not necessarily that we were critiquing him for his performance there, but, you know, at that point in time, we're talking about Xander Schauffele as the best, maybe one of the best guys, if not the best guy that had not won a major. And he's now won two and three tries since then. And really, for a lot of people who critiqued Valhalla as not being a real major, no better way to go out and validate that win than you know what he did this week in the conditions at Royal Troon, and especially what he did on Sunday. He had the round of the day on a Sunday. No better way to finish and go out and hoist that claret jug than what Xander did at Troon on Sunday. So just start there with just, you know, the massive, I don't know if shift is the right word, but just the process of validation we've seen from Xander in the past few months on tour.
Well, I mean, what an open championship to start. I think that's where I got to be starting this discussion is, man, we experienced just every bit of weather. You know, we had heavy winds. We had rain. We had, you know, a Sunday in which it was just a bunch of leaderboard, a golf course that was very difficult. The back nine was just one of the most challenging nine holes of golf that I can remember. And Xander Schauffele, like we talked about all week in our journals, just kind of hanging around. Him and Scotty were just lurking in the dark. So I think we both felt like one of those two guys were going to go do something on Sunday. And the weather was a big question mark heading into the day yesterday, not knowing exactly what we were going to get, because Sunday when I got out there, it was humming. And if you, you know, just asking around with some of the other commentators, hey, what do you think the number's going to be today? And we all said probably 3 or 4 under. We felt like that with how firm and how windy the golf course was in the morning, we didn't see a world in which it was getting to let's see, Xander Schauffele ended up at 9 under par.
Yeah.
So I think just it's really challenging and difficult for players going into this Open Championship in particular to try to figure out what a good score was, how the golf course was playing, and what the winning score and that end number was going to be. So Xander, I think, did such an incredible job in the entire week in knowing what a good score was that day. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I feel like leaving the golf course, he had a sense of, hey, this was really good each and every day. The first day, you know, first 2 days, played with Tiger Woods, played with Patrick Cantlay, which is a very comfortable pairing, but still you're playing with Tiger Woods. I feel like that's always been a kiss of death. People that get paired with Tiger, because you got to deal with the Tiger crowd, and seemingly didn't bother Xander Schauffele as he kept himself in contention, Cantlay playing well the first couple of days. But Sunday was just absolutely epic in that I feel like golf fans for the first 3 days, you know, you're glued to your TV because of the weather, the conditions. You're in a nice AC home and you're just watching guys struggle. You're watching the shots of the crowd, people with umbrellas, people cold. And you're like, man, this is awesome. But Sunday was a different viewing experience because, you know, you had the energy from the crowd. You had birdies being made all day on Sunday. The front nine, you had Tristan Warren. Like the whole day you're like, wait, It's Justin Rose's day. Oh, no, wait. It's going to be Tristan Warren's day. And then it turns into, wait, does Scotty have a chance? And then
Billy Horschel,
and then
too,
he four
right?
putts. Yeah. Well, yeah. This, I guess it started the day with Billy Horschel. And then it turns into, oh, wait, Xander Schauffele won already. And it happened so quick to where, you know, it was over by the end. And that I just didn't have that on my bingo card with nine holes left that somebody other than Tristan Warrens was going to run away with it, because he'd shot 4 under on the front nine and Xander Schauffele's on the back nine. And by the 14th hole, I was like, this thing's over. And Tristan Warrens didn't do anything but make one bogey. So it was a very unique Open Championship in Sunday that I feel like just lived up to, you know, what the great players do. And Xander's kind of entering that category right now, which is being able to play in the biggest events and have some of just memorable big time moments, man. The back nine, 31, bogey free on the day. Heading into the day, I said, hey, somebody's got to go out and shoot two, like two under needs to be your minimum on the front. And I felt like it was going to be a hold on the back. But the conditions, like I talked about, that were in the morning, they I would say softened. If it was 15 to 20 to start the day, when I was out there by the end of the day, it was a, I'd say 10 to 12 mile an hour wind, and it was across, maybe just a little bit of help. And that was enough for Xander Schauffele to hit just shot after shot after shot, and then putted extremely well on the back nine. But the shot of the day for me, for Xander, was the pitching wedge at the 11th hole. That was a hole that to me was the ultimate decider of Xander Schauffele is going to be in this. The pitching wedge that he pulled from 173 yards from the rough was a perfect club pull, unbelievable execution, and to birdie a hole that nobody was birdieing. And that entire week was just the storyline, right? Like, it was the hardest tee shot, one of the hardest holes. And that set him up to then go birdie three more holes on the back nine. So, incredible day. And I can't remember what your original question was, but that was my Xander Schauffele spiel.
Well, I will unpack Xander legacy discussions here shortly. I think that is a very helpful table set for the whole, you know, summing up the entire week, because you're exactly right. I mean, this thing went from, there are four guys, at least, maybe even five, if you throw in, you know, a Shane Lowry or Russell Henry sort of sniffing around there for a little while, that have a chance at lifting the claret jug here at the end of the day. It went from that to anticlimax. You know, I was on the couch sort of after being up early on the weekend to host a little in-game live show for Sports Grid. I was chasing around Walker, you know, all morning long. So I'm like, I'm just going to kind of just recharge a little bit here, wait for this thing to kind of finish up. And you know, we'll see a little bit of intrigue down the stretch. And I look up at a certain point. It's like, oh, Xander won the tournament. Like, this thing's over and nobody else has a chance. And I think, to me, the way that switched so fast is absolutely amazing. I mean, Xander goes out, to your point, in 34, birdies 6 and 7, but then shoots 31 on the back, makes birdies at 11, 13, 14, and 16 to put this thing to bed before even, I think the final group might have still been on 15 or 16, if I recall correctly, when this thing was effectively done and Xander was your Open champion. So, I mean, it's incredible playing. It's, to your point, it's incredible, you know, that sort of sense from Xander of, you know, where he needs to be in relation to the rest of the field to get this thing done. And I think that another topic we'll discuss a little bit later on is Scottie Scheffler. And, you know, obviously he's right there. He finishes tied for seventh. I mean, on paper, not a bad result in a major. Anytime you top 10 in a major, that's great stuff. But the putting, that's maybe the shakiest we've seen it since he switched to that mallet, that spider putter, that's proved to be so successful for him this year. But that, to me, was sort of the difference in Scottie and Xander, is just Xander has this sort of steadiness about him where every single part of his game just feels so bulletproof most of the time, where you're not going to have this huge variance. He may not give you his best stuff on a given day, but he's not going to just have this, you know, horrendous result in any of these categories. And I think that lends itself so well to a major test like this, because you just got to have endurance and be able to make it and get there in the finish line. And to your point, you get there on the back nine on a Sunday where the conditions are starting to kind of soften a little bit. You have, you know, wind helping your direction. You go out, make four birdies, and you win that thing. So I think it's a huge testament to Xander and his game and where he's gotten, you know, and I'm even curious too, just as we kind of further the discussion on Xander, of, you know, what you think the X factor has been this year. That might have been an accidental pun, the X there. But, you know, just this year, obviously he did the speed training. He gained some distance. But what do you think has been the difference from a guy that has been steady his entire career, but now all of a sudden has two majors in one season after having none every prior season of his career?
Xander's been so good ever since, you know, I've been, you know, I've played against him my entire junior golf, amateur career, and he's always been somebody that's gotten better every year. Whether it's from his freshman year to his sophomore year at San Diego State, he just He just would get better every single year. And he's to a point now where it's like, what else can he get better at? Because that's how good he's gotten. I would say that this year in particular, you know, he's always been steady. He's been solid in every aspect of his game. But I think you set it up perfectly. I think the added distance is something that is definitely an X factor, because now he went from being, you know, above average to he's long. You know, he's one of the longer players. And talking with plenty of players, every time they play with Xander, they're like, oh my gosh, he's absolutely smoking it. And whether that's off the tee or irons, because, you know, if they're hitting 7-iron, you know, Xander's in 8. That's how much longer he's gotten, which is in the pro game, that's a jump.
Yeah.
You know, I would say that's considerable. The fact that he's able to hit one less club than the above average guy. So he's turned himself into a long player, and he's done it by, you know, being in the gym. Chris Como has been somebody that's helped him. I think it was about Riviera was the first time I saw Chris Como post Xander Schauffele swinging a golf club. I was like, oh, that could really work, or it may not work. And I think from talking to Xander and Chris about what they've worked on is they've tried to steepen his shoulder turn a little bit. And when he was kind of working through these changes at Bay Hill, I remember watching him, and his time over the ball, his time behind the ball, I thought he was having to think a lot. To me, that was something that you just didn't see Xander quite be as methodical as he was trying to rehearse this feel. But it's obviously paid dividends, because I was a little down on a guy that's, you know, working through something. And then you saw the players, you know, and then it just kind of kept getting better and better, to where at the PGA Championship, you know, it was night, game over. So it's been incredible to watch these small changes, you know, make an impact to where he could feel like he can really go after it, because there's no better feeling for a golfer to when you're able to turn as far as you want on the way back and just rip it on the way through. And that club face is in a really, you know, good spot to where he can deliver it and just have that full, you know, full whack at it, if you will.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he is, and I believe he was, I shouldn't say this with 100% certainty. I'm almost positive he was second in the world rankings prior to this event. I know he and Rory have kind of ping pong back and forth this year, but coming out of this week, he absolutely is second in the world rankings. And that FedEx Cup standings list got, you know, ever so slightly tighter. Scotty is just shy of 6,000 points. Xander has just north of 4,000 now, with Rory in third place with 2,500. So they're starting to kind of creep up into our atmosphere with the one and done pick, Smiley. That's where Xander's arrived now, finally. So it'll be a fun race coming in. I mean, I think I'd be stunned if it was anyone other than those two, 1 and 2, heading into East Lake on the points list, with Scotty having a 2-shot lead over Xander. But it's going to be a thoroughly interesting stretch run with these two guys as the dominant forces in the game. And to kind of further that discussion a little bit, if you go to Data Golf, you go to Open Championship and kind of sort by strokes gain categories, it appears that the metric that, you know, most closely aligns with success this week was strokes gain approach.
Yeah.
Like that's where the most sort of green is. And if you sort by that category, that is a category that Xander led the field in at 2.24 strokes gain. Second on that list, Scotty.
Colin.
2.21.
No, I have Colin on mine. Oh, that's round 4. My bad.
Yeah. That's, yeah. No.
Colin striped it on Sunday, if you wanted to know.
which I did. And that's another guy that, I mean, that's a whole other discussion as well, where, you know, it is quite the crew headed to Paris for the Olympics, where you have those three guys we just mentioned, plus Wyndham Clark. And curious to hear what form you think Wyndham is going to be in after a pretty brutal miscut, and just where the state of his game is. But just to get back to that Xander Scotty discussion, obviously the putting this week was, you know, not Scotty's best. We touched on it. And I'm wondering if we think this is a cause for renewed concern, or same place we were to begin the season. It's Charlie. just get him on a different putting surface. You know, Red Fescue, he didn't play the Scottish last week, so he didn't really get that much of a tune-up on the surface. It's bumpy. It's weird. The rolls are different. It was a one-off, one-week thing. Get him back home. He's going to be fine.
Yeah, I had a good conversation with Jason Day and Denny McCarthy about the greens this week because they were bumpy. They weren't that good. Mm. They I don't know if you could see it on the television, but up in person, you're watching balls just like do this. So the greens were not rolling true. And the question that they were talking to themselves about was, do these greens help good putters or bad putters? And they couldn't settle in on an answer. And so I think we found out the answer in that. These greens help, you know, they don't help bad putters.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Not saying Scotty's a good putter now, but it doesn't help him because he had a ton of whip outs. If you watched him the first couple days, maybe first 3 days, I didn't get to watch him on Sunday. But I think by the end of the week, he probably just didn't have any confidence in the putter and his green reading, because I think they were doing a little bit of everything, to be honest, this week on these greens.
Yeah. I mean, it was just sort of bizarre to see where he was this week, you know, in relation to the field. And I think, too, you know, there are guys that you know, we saw Shane Lowry roll exceptionally well on Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday just it was like we're watching a different guy. And I think, you know, maybe obviously wind comes into play when you're putting in Scotland more so than any other place maybe in the world. I can't say that with a full degree of certainty, but certainly more than the United States, where most of these PGA Tour events are played. So, you know, Could very well just be a one-off week. I saw some jokes and suggestions that Rory's going to offhandedly suggest that Scotty should go to a broomstick and then he's going to, you know, come back and win a million events again. But yeah, it's just an interesting one from him. And I think we've reflected on this every major post PGA, just because his week was insane there. But, you know, where are we at on Scotty's season? I mean, obviously a brilliant, brilliant season. You know, one, I think six times is where we're at with you know, his. But I think after that Masters win, we're thinking it's going to be almost hard for him to not win a Grand Slam. And here we are, all four majors played. He won 104. Again, you know, could finish strong at the end of the season, could have a good showing at the Olympics, a good showing at the President's Cup. And we'd say this is one of the better seasons we've seen in recent memory. But do you think there in any way, shape or form, he looks at, you know, the weird week at the PGA, which you could just chalk up to off course noise, and you're still playing pretty well in spite of all the arrests and the crazy situation there. But then at Pinehurst, maybe a venue that didn't exactly suit him, you know, that week, and maybe it wasn't a fan of the unpredictability of, you know, some of the lies you were getting when you were hitting in the native areas. And then at Troon, really just kind of came down to the putter. I mean, I wonder how you think Scotty takes stock of his major season in 2024.
I think he overthought the scheduling by the end. I think his I think he'll be better next year in planning his year around the majors, which he probably did. But I think this year in particular, he had a little bit of regrets in his scheduling. You know, I think back to after the PGA Championship, I thought he was going to be off for quite some time. I didn't think we'd see him for a bit. And he played the next week at Colonial. I was like, why are you playing Colonial? There was no need to. He's had a great year up to that point. He'd won plenty of times. He just had a baby, just got arrested. Seemed like a good time to shut it down for a bit and to tune up for the rest of the year. And I think that bled into the U.S. Open, playing the week before at the Memorial, which I think the PGA Tour didn't help these guys out, by the way, with scheduling, you know, the Memorial, the U.S. Open, followed by the Travelers 3 weeks in a row. And I think a lot of guys were worn out during that stretch, especially the Travelers. Guys are just dead. The U.S. Open, I think guys that were in contention, like Scotty, not making excuses for him, but I think he was a little burnt out at the U.S. Open. And this week at Troon, you know, you can make an argument that, oh, you should, like, why wouldn't you go play the Scottish? You know, like getting some reps, some live competitive reps before, you know, playing at the Open Championship is worth it. But he had gotten there on Saturday, I believe, at Troon. So I'm not faulting a guy's game plan to get early to an Open Championship venue to try to see all the weather conditions. So I think if we're just looking at his major season in a whole, I think after the Masters, you would say you'd be very disappointed. But also, I thought he played a really good Open Championship, just didn't get the putts to fall. And then I think you can look at the U.S. Open and say, you know, maybe just playing too much before the U.S. Open was a bit of a factor there. And I just slightly disappointed, but the year he's had, you can't say anything that he's done is disappointing at all. He's got a lot of trophies.
Yeah. Well, and it's a great reminder of just how hard it is and how sometimes, you know, we not like to overreact. We like to celebrate moments and celebrate greatness. And you're looking at the way he played early on and saying, we haven't seen anything like this since Tiger. And that's maybe again, another reminder of just how good Tiger was. And that even Tiger never won a Grand Slam in a calendar year, you know, that at the height of the greatest greatness that we've seen in our lifetimes in the game of golf, even that guy couldn't get it done. So, you know, there are a lot of breaks and a lot of things that happen that are in your control, a lot of things that happen that are out of your control. And for Scotty this year, I think it was a little mix of both with those majors and still, you know, a season to be proud of and one that's still in progress. And we have, you know, time left to see, you know, what he can do to close this season out. A guy that, you know, we talked about Scotty, one in the world still, Xander, two in the world, three, Rory. We've obviously unpacked a little bit of his struggles, you know, on our daily recap journals in much shorter form, but now have the space to do it in longer form. I don't know what on Sunday's in-game live on Sports Grid, I had Neil Schuster from No Laying Up on. It was a really fun conversation. And, was just talking about the double-edged sword of Rory. And on the one hand, hearing him miss the cut and talk to media after and say, yeah, after 22 holes, I was starting to think about where I was going on vacation, was a wonderfully honest moment, refreshing to hear that sort of honesty from a professional athlete. But at the same time, I'm not sure I would have said that out loud to people who are fans of yours, to people who would like to see a little more resilience and drive and grit in an Open Championship and a major championship that, you know, everyone's hoping for you to break that streak and kind of see you, you know, win one for the first time since 2014. I think a great testament to a mindset we saw that was different than that was a guy you followed on Sunday and Sam Burns, who was 7 over in this major after whatever it was, 11 or 12 holes and shot 76 on Thursday and finds a way to turn it around and get in and around the lead heading into a Sunday. Now, Rory might've just said, hey, I was a victim of this draw. You know, I don't, you know, I'm good enough of a player to know that, you know, when I don't have a chance, I don't have a chance. And that was more of a comment reflecting that more than anything. But I'm just curious, you know, as to your opinions on where we stand with Rory. This was the 10 years since he'd won his last major, and there were a lot of different chances for him to go out and win one. Obviously, he doesn't do so. He has won twice on tour this year at the Wells Fargo, and then, of course, with Shane Lowry at the Zurich. So definitely not a loss of a year. But, you know, all that he's been through on and off the course, you know, where we stand on Rory and particularly coming out of this week, you know, how disappointing this miscut is.
I mean, I think at Open Championships, it's a little different because, listen, he had a couple, you know, shots that they got away from him and just got off to a, you know, not a great start on a really difficult day on Friday. It wasn't easy, you know, and I think that, he just had a couple execution errors, just trying to maybe take on too much a little bit at the 11th hole on Thursday, hitting it out of bounds. But we saw tons of guys hit it out of bounds. It's a really hard tee shot. But just as far as, you know, this week or just his major season in general, I feel, you know, no more less confident than I already did that Rory will win another major. It's going to happen. It has to happen. Mm. It's not guaranteed to happen, but just from the amount of guys that I have an opportunity to get to watch, you know, he's on a very, very short list, right? It's just going to be about, you know, everything going right. And, you know, doing exactly kind of what Xander did this week, which is just hang around, work. This is what Tiger Woods did for years, just understand what a good score is and just find yourself in contention on a back nine on a Sunday. And like similar to Pinehurst, which he found himself in a, you know, in contention, and he was taking advantage of it until the last, you know, four or five holes where, you know, it kind of all slipped away.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because sometimes I feel for Rory in the sense that he is clearly this phenomenally talented player, you know, one of the most talented players of this generation, maybe, you know, in terms of skills, you know, the most talented player since Tiger. Yet he has this sort of humanness and honesty that you don't see from a lot of guys, you know, that again, going back to the comments he made on Friday, you know, it's appreciated that he's willing to open himself up like that. And I think that comes with a lot of other human sort of behaviors, like being acutely aware of where Bryson stood on Sunday at Pinehurst and that sort of back and forth that you noted. I think there are so many, you know, examples we can point to of things where, you know, he had a sort of a way he played that went about the game or his approach where he looked back on and said, I would have done that differently. And then he goes and changes and adjusts it. And then something else crops up and becomes the issue during a major week. And so it's, you know, on talent alone, he's going to be in and around it multiple times. And to your point, he is going to get it done. You know, it could be any number of these majors where he's going to get it to the finish line and win one. But there also is this interesting experience of watching him try different things. And even this year, coming into the year, shift the way he was playing in certain events before majors, leading in and trying to, you know, adjust his prep a little bit. And that not exactly, you know, working out in terms of producing a trophy. So that to me is a fascinating thing about Rory, is he is the closest thing we have personality wise to just like a normal human being, while also just being the supremely gifted player who has all the tools to show up every week and win going away, like we saw at Quail Hollow for the Wells Fargo this year.
Yeah, totally. It's a shame that the next major is 9 months away.
it's a real shame for a number of reasons. Another guy that, again, I'm not trying to do like the disappointment train here, but it's just interesting after four majors to just take stock of a little bit of the season for some of these guys. And this one, I think, has more of a finality to it, even though he has several events left to play this year. But we talked a lot coming into the week about John Rahm and, you know, some of the breaks he had this year, his performance at the Masters, his miscut at the PGA were very much in his control. The US Open, you know, having to withdraw because of that foot injury, out of his control. But he came into this week and really needed a good result, or, you know, and or a win to feel like in some ways it validated his standard of performance. And I loved the way he sort of battled on the weekend. He ends up with a top 10 finish, T7, 1 under for the tournament, 3 under on Sunday. It was, you know, 4 under at one point on Sunday and had you know, one of the rounds of the day going early on. You know, obviously he's got the LIV team championship left, the LIV individual championship. Do you think, you know, what do you think is going on in Rahm's head and just his along with his team coming out of a top 10 in a major? That's a really, really good performance, but we know what John Rahm's standards are.
Yeah, no, this was a really, really promising week for John. I didn't think he had his best stuff at all on Thursday. And I couldn't believe when, you know, it really even after Friday as well, when I saw where he was at the leaderboard or where he stood, like kind of near par, I was like, man, this guy really grinded his ass off to be in this position. So I commend him for the effort that he put forth this week, because, yes, we've been critical of his major performances and rightfully so. You know, a US Open, obviously, you know, the foot issue, which is, you know, caught us all off guard. But we do not judge people that have toe injuries. That is something that we have a hard stance on this podcast.
Hard stance.
But the PGA Championship was a shock, and he just looked right, all out of sorts. And that was one where you could point to, it's like, okay, this was really poor form. And I don't know if he had just bad toast or bad breakfast every morning, or his body wasn't right, or just, you know, for the first time, John Rahm showed up to a golf course and his normally efficient golf game just became inefficient, which is like everyone else and like so many other mortals on the tour. You know, he had just shown up the PGA with nothing, which was so unusual to see him so off. So it was fair for us to judge. It's like, is he getting enough reps on the LIV Golf Tour to be showing up to majors in form? And that was a fair argument. And we've been critical of him because we haven't gotten to see, you know, a major championship where it felt like, you know, Rahm was in the mix. And this one really felt that way. It felt like if the weather conditions held up like they were this morning, John Rahm is blitzing an incredibly difficult golf course. He's playing in some of the heavier winds of the front nine. Starts out birdie, birdie, birdie. You're like, hell yeah, that's sick. This is the John Rahm that we all love to see. So I think this was a really positive week for John Rahm and for all the LIV bots that say we're not, you know, you know, we're not supportive of players that have left the tour. I like John Rahm. I like cheering for him. I wish he was still playing on the tour, but it's our job to be critical of anybody that went to the LIV Golf Tour and what their major performances are versus when they were still playing the tour. And so this was a good week for John. It's going to be a long time till Augusta to where we really can get to judge him again. And I'll, you know, still follow how he plays on the LIV Golf Tour. And he's going to have to do, you know, something that like Joaquin Niemann has done, which is, you know, shoot some really low scores, win, you know, 2 to 3 or 4 times on that tour. Not to say that he's not having a great year. He is. He's finished top 10 every single time he's teed it up, but he hasn't won. So I think winning on that tour will be something that I'll be looking out for John Rahm, but overall a positive week for him, in my opinion.
And I think, Smiley, that's a good jumping off point too, because, you know, this is a year where we saw some good LIV performances and majors. I mean, we saw the best of those was Bryson DeChambeau lifting that trophy at Pinehurst and winning a U.S. Open, where not only did he play well on the course, but just delighting fans off it. And even during his round, really leaning into that. I think, you know, we've said numerous times on the show, including after the PGA Championship, how much we miss Bryson and how much we enjoy having him around, the excitement he adds to these events.
Yep.
So it was great having him in the mix. Of course, misses the weekend here at Troon and did not have that around to kind of, you know, I'm not sure what his fan interactions would have been like in the UK, maybe a little different than the United States, but still, you know, he's a fun guy to have around when he's in contention. And I just think in general, you know, so Rahm obviously had a rough major season, but top 10 here, Bryson wins the US Open. What sort of stock are we taking of LIV performances and majors this year? Because I think there's a two part of this, right? It's like which guys were able to get into majors, and do those pathways look, you know, any different in the years to come? It seems like there's been some sort of a softening for major governing bodies as to like, hey, we're going to get, you know, we're going to get LIV players who are deserving of a bid into these majors, you know, just provided they are indeed deserving by our criteria. So, you know, I think that there was Cam Smith was an interesting one, misses the cut here this weekend, but a guy that was in and around it at earlier majors this year, and a guy that you and I have talked about. It's like he's going to win, in my opinion, he's going to win the Masters at some point. And so, you know, just, the, you know, how do we feel about what we saw, and, you know, maybe some guys that we are excited to see, you know, play in future majors, maybe some guys that, you know, like I was looking at some criteria for DJ, like looks like might not play in too many more other than the ones he has a lifetime exemption to.
Yeah, no, the majors have done a really good job, I feel like, of awarding exemptions to players that deserve to be there. It deserves I think the best way to describe deserve to be there, it's like, did you go the extra mile to try to get world ranking points? And Joaquin Niemann, it's like the best example. And if you're a player on the LIV Golf Tour and you're not happy about not getting into events, you got to play better on your tour, and then you got to go play really well in opportunities to try to qualify in. There's plenty of places in which you can qualify into the majors that give away spots, especially the Open Championship, US Open. There's, you know, sectional qualifying that you can go compete in. But there's, you know, the Opens as well, like towards the end of the year in December. So if you're not happy, first off, play good either when you're there, play good on your tour, but then also go and try to play in some other events to help get your way in, because you're not getting world ranking points. But when I look at this major season in general for the LIV Golf Tour players, I would, if you out of 10, if you had to rank, you know, how they performed in this major cycle compared to prior years, I would say this was probably the worst major season besides like it's, I think Bryson gets the bump to where it's not mm-hmm. the worst and in the middle. But if Rory wins at the US Open, I think you look at this season and be like, man, this was a tough run because it never really felt like besides at the US Open that there was really a live golfer really in the mix. You know, where the Masters, it was Scottie Scheffler, it was Ludwig Åberg, it was Tommy Fleetwood, Max Homa, Colin Morikawa. That was the group that was really competing for it, where the guys like Cameron Smith, Tyrrell Hatton, they had, and Cameron, you know, they were never really a part of the storyline. Bryson DeChambeau kind of got into it. He was there, probably the one that contended the most in that event, I would say.
Wasn't that Saturday? I remember correctly. Yeah.
He was there, but he wasn't quite as much of the storyline. So the Masters, you know, that was you didn't really have a live golfer in the mix. And then you get to the US Open. Obviously, that was a big, big win for Liv, having Bryson win. But you looked throughout the rest of the board, man. I mean, there was the next best guy was Sergio Garcia at T12. And that's nothing at Sergio, but like you would have rather had somebody else from the Liv crowd be somebody in there competing, you know, one of their young guys or somebody that, like a Joaquim Niemann, for mm-hmm. example, would be somebody that Liv would love to have up competing in these majors. But you go past Sergio and you keep scrolling, you're not going to find a guy till Brooks Koepka T26. So that's another event where it's like, all right, you had Bryson win, but who else played good? No, really, not too many past that. Let's go to the PGA Championship, which I'm going out of order. I'm sorry for doing that. my brain is still on that the US Open's the second major, but it's not. The PGA Championship. Bryson's kind of saved their...
He's 100%.
He has saved their live cycle as far as the majors is concerned. But past that, man, I keep going. I'm going. And the next guy is... Should you help me here? The PGA Championship. I don't see anybody until, man, this is a tough scene.
We're doing a little live research as we go, but I've, you know,
Brooks Koepka T26.
Yeah. You had the PGA board. So I skipped ahead to the Open and because out of curiosity, I was like, you know, listen, it was a tough, tough draw. And, you know, I there were a lot of names on the PGA Tour side that did not make the cut that were sort of shocking. But past Rahm at T7, unless I'm just missing a name, it was Dean Burmeister that was really.
And he's played well over there.
And he has.
He's played well. That's somebody that I feel like a lot of the live bots will say like Dean Burm, like they've been screaming it from the rooftops. And I'm here for a guy like Dean that if he wants to be, if he's got a nice career in front of him and maybe can sneak off a major, then great. That's awesome. But, Dean's not going to move any needles by any means. You know what I mean? Like if Dean walked into an airport, I don't think either of us would be like, oh, there's Dean, you know.
Someone had a great I'm so bad at the attribution here, but someone had a hilarious tweet about it was him reacting to a bad shot, and it's like an XFL coach when his safety makes an interception and tries to lateral the return and fumbles it, and it was just like him in that green stinger outfit looking very XFL-ish. It was a hilarious joke, but it's such an interesting thing because my feeling about this league, this tour is just ever evolving. You know, look, I think we felt a certain way about it when it started, but I'm always trying to keep an open mind and, you know, be willing to change and evolve as we get more information, as we kind of see things develop. And I think the place where I am right now is I have a great appreciation for and more of a willingness to give grace to the guys that are making an effort to be additive back into the golf ecosystem and actively participate. Mm-hmm. And so guys like Bryson DeChambeau, to me, I genuinely miss. I genuinely have done a big sort of 180 on how I feel about him, because in his own way, he is doing something with the live money that I think is making golf a more fun place, more enjoyable to watch, that is bringing new fans to the game. And I genuinely appreciate that. I think it's a very cool thing. And I think, shoot, here we are in the golf content game, so to speak. And there's a lot of stuff he's doing well that it's like, when we kind of delve into that sort of world, we're going to probably borrow pages from his notebook because he's done such a good job of it. So I think, you know, guys like Bryson, and then you've noted a couple times, Joaquin Niemann. I mean, one of my favorite days at the Masters was, I believe it was Saturday, walking around with Minwoo Lee and Joaquin Niemann, just seeing two young stars who just crushed the golf ball, hit it high, just do some incredible things with it, playing together, and just thinking, you know, I miss having this guy around more frequently because he's just fun to watch play golf. And Joaquin has made a consistent effort to qualify, to play in things that are going to keep him in and around the top 50, and all these major governing bodies have rewarded those efforts. And so that is no disrespect to a guy like a Taylor Gooch or even a guy like a Dustin Johnson, who are in different parts of their life. I mean, DJ obviously is a major champion. And he's very honest and upfront about, I was offered a lot of money, and so I took the money and I played less golf, and that's what I want to do right now. And good on you. I'm not going to begrudge you for that. Taylor Gooch, you know, young family, kids, for whatever reason, doesn't feel like he has the time or the energy to go try to qualify for these things. And that's his decision, and I will forever respect that. But I just think for me, for Liv, it's those guys that are, they've taken the money, but they're still trying to do unique things in the world of golf and participate and make an active effort. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where I'm finding myself most appreciative of the guys on that tour.
Yeah. And I think just in Joaquin, who I love his game, you know, when he won at Riviera, we were ready to crown him the next big thing. Mm-hmm. And not to say that he still isn't going to be somebody that has a great major career, because he very well could have a great back half. I don't know how old he is. I don't know if back half is the right word, but, you know, in the peak of his age and career, just be able to, you know, hit all the shots and have the speed and where your body's not quite breaking down yet. You know, we have a big enough sample size with Joaquin to look at his major championships and say, all right, it's kind of time. And it kind of felt like this was going to be the week in which he had his first career top 10 in a major championship. He's played in 23 and is yet to have a top 10. Hmm. That to me is, it's alarming. It's very surprising for a player that's played well, and has had a really nice LIV Golf year to go through a cycle this year and, you know, finish T22, T39 and didn't get into the US Open and finished T58. Maybe he has a great US Open. Did he qualify? Did he try to qualify for the US Open? I think he did. He didn't make it through.
Yeah, I believe so. Yes.
And maybe that's kind of a misstep to not have him there. But also the US Open, you know, there's plenty of guys that don't get into the US Open that have to go qualify. If you're not in the top 60, everybody has to. So there's no free handout. There's never been free handouts at the US Open unless you're Tiger Woods. And Joaquin Niemann hasn't been able to deserve that yet. By any means, because the record speaks for itself. But and this is like where I'll kind of segue us into this last bit of this episode, because Justin Rose very easily could have been a player to say, you know what, Open Championship, you know, I would love to play. I've had a great career in majors. You know, maybe the Open should throw me a bone and you know, give me a spot. Guess what Justin Rose decided to do? He decided to go over, qualify, you know, put your pride aside, because, you know, for a guy that shows up at a qualifier, you know, it is, you know, it takes a little bit of hit to the ego, right? Like you have to show up and be okay with like, hey, this is where I'm at in my career. I'm not fully exempted to major championships, but Justin Rose says, you know what? I still feel like I can win one of these and I'm going to go try to qualify. Goes and qualifies and has a dream week. Really, you know, every single shot that he hit, it felt like was the most important shot of his career. And the guts that he showed on Saturday, I thought was just epic. Billy being out there I'll never forget that Saturday, walking around with Billy Horschel and Justin Rose, two guys in whatever stage in their career you want to say they're in. to go out there and just be veterans and bulls, man, and just be able to grind out just an incredible day and in round. And I know neither player won, but it just felt like that was their win in majors, right? Like I know Justin's totally. Had 13 or 14 top 10s in majors, and he's had so many opportunities. And I think Billy will remember that major championship like it's a win for a long time. I know he doesn't have the Claire Jug, and same with Billy, or excuse me, and Rose, but just a dream week for both of those two guys. And I think they should wake up this morning with a lot of pride.
100%. I think it's interesting that in an era where we've just spent the last few weeks talking about all this young talent in the game of golf, the Luke Clantons, the Michael Thorbjornsons, you know, the Davis Thompsons, you know,
Nick Dunlap, shout out Nick Dunlap winning in Barracuda, right?
Just won the Barracuda first time ever to have a guy win as an amateur and a pro in the same year on the PGA Tour. I mean, they're, you know, Gordon Sargent, who just teed it up again for another major this past week at Troon, just a phenomenal wave of talent in the game of golf right now. It's such a beautiful reminder that the way this game goes is you can still hang around and play if you have the grit and the determination, the experience, and the ability to know how to shoot a score in a certain condition. And that is what Justin Rose and Billy Horschel did in spades this week at Troon. So a huge, huge accomplishment and a wonderful reminder of the way the game of golf, you know, works, can work, and does work often. And so cool to see those guys continuing to grind. And I think their comments reflected that, you know, of just, hey, look, it definitely hurts to fall short, but proud of what I've done this week. Just to tie the bow on Neiman, he missed on golf's longest day, missed U.S. Open qualifying by a single shot. He had a pair of 1-under 71s at the Bears Club in Florida, the right. qualifier where
Kuchar good for him won. For qualifying. So,
yeah,
so that's
yeah. So gave it a shot. So the place I want to go to kind of wrap this thing up is just talking about Troon itself, RNA, the setup of the course this week. There was a lot of chatter about this. And so I talked to Bill Haas about this on In-Game Live on Sports Grid yesterday, where just trying to separate the player perspective from the fan perspective. And, you know, I think yeah. he said, look, yeah. as a fan,
it was awesome.
I loved watching this. It was crazy. It was chaos. It was, you know, you had guys that were, you know, for me, the thing will forever sum up this week is watching on Saturday, Siwoo Kim go out in the early wave with the sun out and hit a 4-iron ace the 17th, and then watching Shane Lowry come through in the last group and hit driver there and still not even make it to the green. And that for me as a fan is like, this is hilarious. I love this so much. But And Bill noted this, and I think you've kind of alluded to this as well, is that as a player, I don't know if I would have liked it so much. I would have liked certain tee boxes to be moved up and just would have made this less of a unpredictable grind. And so I just wonder the whole week in its totality, you know, where you net out on this. Like, are you okay with this being a very unique, you know, grindy, unpredictable, at times unfair challenge at the Open Championship once a year? Or do you think more could have been done to make this maybe a little bit more of a fair test?
Man, normally I'm all for fair, you know, and just a normal tour setup. But this week was so unique with how windy it was on Thursday, Friday. And the weather forecast on Saturday called for rain, but I don't know if it called for the wind that we experienced later in the day and just how the temperatures got cooler. So, golly, I kind of waffle back and forth because, yes, you could have moved a tee box here and there up, probably a couple up on some of those holes on the back nine, specifically the 13th hole and the 15th hole, and probably a little bit up on 17 and really 18 too. But, God, was it just – it was fun, man. I don't know. Because – you do make it considerably easier, as we saw with guys like Sam Burns, Tristan Lawrence, Russell Henley, even JT having really good Saturdays, being, you know, in the that sweet spot, which was the tee time that was, you know, close enough to Shane Lowry at 7-under, sitting at around, you know, 3-4-2 over par, and have a day in which they go out and shoot 5-6-under. Before the really conditions arrive. So I think the weather was so unique in this week and that it affected so much on scoring on when you were playing. But at the end of the week, I mean, I don't think there was I think the players that were at the top of the leaderboard, I don't think they were just in the good wave. Like, I think these players, they fought through the conditions, they fought through adversity. And the tagline of the Open Championship, forged by nature, was a really, there couldn't be a better tagline and saying of forged by nature. This week was true to that. And I felt like the guy that handled it the best was going to be the eventual champion. That ended up being Xander Schauffele. But there were plenty of guys that handled the adversity. They just didn't have the X factor, if you will, down the stretch, mm-hmm. like Xander did.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, I think big picture, reflecting on this year in the majors, I think we were so close. You know, Augusta is Augusta. It's as perfect as it can be every single year. I thought Pinehurst was a phenomenal major test and just right on that line of a U.S. Open challenge. And Troon, in the same way, was just a delightful, unpredictable Open Championship sort of test. I think if the PGA had been closer to an Oak Hill style of test, we would have looked back on the season and said, this was just so cool in the way in which we had challenging major championship golf at all four venues. So we'll see if, you know, Kerry Haig and some of the others in PGA of America leadership take us back to that place in future years, because I think each one of these being a grind in their own sort of unique way mm-hmm. is a very cool thing. And again, this week at Royal Troon, it was fun to see that as well. So that is where we will go out, Smiley. You have to go hit a tee time somewhere in Ireland. Any final words as you kind of take us out, wrap the Open Championship, and go play some golf in Ireland?
I think that the eighth hole, the postage stamp, is somehow underrated. I think it's arguably probably my favorite, if not top five, top three favorite hole in major championship golf. And it's definitely in the top three, and it lived up to the hype this week. It was epic. You know, all the different wind conditions that we had, the huge numbers, the brilliance of the hole, how it played 100 yards on Sunday. And even Shane Lowry talking about the conditions and said, I mean, the best hole out there is 100 yards. And I just think that if you didn't enjoy the eighth hole this week, And I also argue that it's the best positioned hole on any golf course in the world, and that the first seven holes, you know, prepare you for this. You know, for instance, the wind was down off the right for seven straight holes, and then you switch back around and have this diabolical short par three with a totally opposite wind direction that you're holding, and now you got to try to hook it. I just think it's the coolest hole for me in major championship golf. And so hopefully y'all enjoyed it as much on TV as, and I know some of the players didn't enjoy it. But I think they'll all say it's, if you hit a good shot, you're rewarded. But if you're not able to, you know, have the nerve about you to execute a shot on such thin margins, that you could walk away with a big number there. So shout out to the postage stamp, epic hole in golf.
Shout out to the postage stamp. Delightful to come out of a major and have little memories like that of just, you know, the essence of an entire place. And we saw that with certain holes at Pinehurst, the 13th among others, and just leaving and saying, man, I love that and I can't wait to come back. And so as an anchor site, we will indeed come back to Royal Troon. I'm not sure exactly what the next date is, but fun seeing that hole.
And great Open, man. Great
really,
Open.
Really cool. So fun Open. Xander Schauffele, your champion golfer of the year, is second major in 2024. And so, Smiley, we're going to send you off to play some golf in Ireland. Of course, because you're on this trip, midweek, as previously mentioned, we have a little Scotland golf trip recap that felt like a nice bow on the last 2 weeks at the Renaissance and then at Troon. And now we have some more Scottish golf we're talking on Wednesday. And then we're going to come on the back end and recap the 3M Open whenever you're back stateside, Smiley. And then
probably get into this Dublin golf trip.
We might have back-to-back golf trip reviews.
Yeah.
You really love to see it. So we got that, and then we're into
Olympics.
We'll
see the state of my game too. Oh boy.
No left or right 30-mile-per-hour winds. Please.
I'm excited to go play, man. I need to go eat some breakfast. Our bus is leaving in 19 minutes, so.
Go grab some brekkie. Enjoy it, buddy. Thanks, everyone else, for watching and listening. We'll be back here to talk to you soon.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.